For this evening, the Reverend Digon Gaither. Digon began his Buddhist practice in 1995 in the Vipassana tradition before studying Zen in 2003 with Rushin Paul Haller Roshi. He received lay ordination in 2006, where he was given the name Digon, or Great Vow, and received priest ordination in July of 2011. Digon speaks internationally on a variety of topics, particularly around gender, sexuality, social justice, and their intersections with the Dharma. He also sits on a number of boards and committees that serve community needs and further social justice causes. Digon also has his BA in philosophy and religion from San Francisco State, and an MA in Buddhist studies. He identifies as disabled, queer, and can be reached at queerdharma.net. So, Digon, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you very much, Carl. And welcome to you all. It's good to be here. I love this little sangha, and I always am thrilled to come and sit and share the Dharma together. Start with a poem called The Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethoughts of grief. I come into the presence of still water and I feel above me the day blind stars waiting for their light. For a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. And for those of you who have heard me speak before, I think it's it won't surprise you when I say that, you know, one of the most interesting parts of Buddhism for me is that really Buddhist practice is not good for anything. Anything that we try to sort of chase after, or we think that Buddhist practice will solve for us, well, it's probably not. When I started practicing, I thought it would resolve my grief. I thought it would help with my mental health difficulties. I thought I would, you know, sort of skip through the rest of my life happy, joyous, and free. You know, and then you sit down for a minute and you realize that that's not really going to happen. Because no matter where we go in the world, we're still us. And what's great about Buddhist practice is that it gives us the opportunity to get in touch with what it means to be us. So, you know, Buddhist practice didn't help me with my grief, but it did help me learn how to integrate grief into my life, to not be so overwhelmed by it, to not be so afraid of it, to not be ruled by it. Same thing with my anger, with my resentments, with all of the, you know, it helped me to understand how to take care of the physicality that was creating, adding in extra things to my mental health condition so that I could then respond more appropriately to the situations in my own mental health. And so although I wouldn't say I'm skipping through my life happy, joyous, and free, but I'm certainly at a lot more ease. I don't seem to be so in conflict with the world, right? And I think that that's, at its essence, what ongoing, continuous Buddhist practice helps us find, is how to not be so at odds with ourselves. How to rest easy amidst the wild things, amidst all the bits and pieces that make up what it is to be me in this moment. You know, all of the causes and conditions and history that I bring into this moment, but also all the causes and conditions to liberation. You know, the beautiful thing about Zen in particular is that Zen tells us that we're absolutely already enlightened and that we have everything we need. When I first started to practice, I found myself in a small little sitting group over on Dolores Street led by Howie Cohen. And some of you have heard the story. And at the end of the first period of meditation, Howie gave a talk. And the only thing I remember from the talk was he said nothing was broken. And I sort of thought, well, this guy's full of shit. Like, my whole life felt broken at that moment. That's why I was there. I've come to understand that what Howie was trying to point to, and I think what we mean when we say something like, you have everything you need, is twofold. One, given the causes and conditions of everything that's come before in my life, how could I be otherwise? How could my experience be otherwise? How could my world be otherwise, right? Like everything led me to that moment. So nothing was broken in that. But I think also the other deep sort of piece of that is that when we can slow down enough, our life starts to tell us and give us information that we need about how to not be so at odds with it. You know, as we start to develop those muscles of quietly sitting in reflection and following our breath and getting in tune with this body and the physicality and what's it like to be me? What's the experience I'm experiencing while I experience it? I start to get access to information that I have. I just didn't know I had it. You know, my teacher's favorite line is, what does your practice ask of you? And I sort of roll that around into, what does my life ask of me? What is my moment? What is this moment asking of me? And so the understanding that Buddhist practice doesn't give us an escape route. It doesn't take us out of our life. It doesn't save us from that which doesn't need to be, we don't need to be saved from. You're not broken. Your life is not broken. Learning how to take care of this life, to take care of this one, learning how to respond appropriately in each moment. You know, Suzuki Roshi said that there's no enlightened people, only enlightened moments. He has also said, I've heard it attributed to him and also to Charlotte Joko Beck, but that enlightenment is merely an appropriate response. And so that can be really mundane, like I'm driving in a car and I come to a stoplight and I stop. But it can also be, I come to a moment of grief or loss, and I cry. Or I'm brokenhearted. Or, you know, I come in contact with the injustice of certain systems of operation inside the United States, and I grieve. Or I get angry. And then the question is not, is it okay for me to be angry? It's really like, well, what then do I do about that anger? What then do I do about the grief? What then do I do about whatever it is that I'm coming in contact with? What's an appropriate response? And that answer always comes in the quietest voice, in the quietest moments, when I'm fully engaged with the physicality of this moment. See, that's why when we sit down and we're talking about meditation, you know, and we're focused on our breath, or we're focused on some physical sensation, we're focused on some object of meditation, it's a physical sensation that often we connect to because our bodies exist only in this moment. We might have a memory of our body from a moment ago, or we might have some ideas about our future body, but really, when we get in touch with it, when we really are experiencing it, we can only do that from this moment. And so, you know, we watch the sensation so that we're in touch with this moment. And then as we settle into the experience of this moment, and then this moment, and then this moment, the chaos and the cacophony of the competing voices and pulls on our attention can start to settle down, and we can start to hear the actual request of our practice. I've started a practice of when I have a big emotion, anger, annoyance, frustration, I've started the practice of sort of going, okay, so where is that living in my body? What's it feel like? What's the nature of the physicality of that emotion? Because the truth is our bodies and our minds and our hearts are not separate. And so there's always going to be a physicality of that moment. And when I can get in touch with the physicality, I'm brought into contact with it in a way that doesn't put me in opposition to it, but it opens me up to it. And it starts to invite me to give it space. And when I give it space, I'm not prone to being dragged around by it. And instead, I'm able to start to hear it, to pick up what it is that I'm trying to ask myself. What is it that I need in this moment? Because the truth is that until I found Buddhist practice, that question of what do I need in this moment was not something I had ever been trained to consider. I was raised in a way that, you know, we didn't have needs. Men did not have needs, and we certainly didn't have any emotions other than anger and sometimes extreme joy, but not very often. Mostly it was just anger. So, you know, learning how to listen and feel and have a full breadth of experience of a human being, and to give myself permission to be a person. And I think that, you know, when, whoops. My light just went off. When the Buddha talks about, you know, no self, it's not that what he's really talking about is this, there's no individual, unending, uninterrupted, and disconnected self that exists outside of all of creation, outside of everything. But I'm still me. I'm still a person. I still have to take care of this body and this life, and I'm still going to be subject to the experiences that human beings have, no matter how much I practice. And so that's my message today, and often it's my message a lot is give up this idea that you have to find something special outside of your own experience, or that Buddhist practice will give you something that you don't already have. Or that, you know, there's something broken that needs to be fixed. Because that's the good and the bad news. Nothing's broken. Nothing needs to be fixed. And you still got to do it. You still have to find a way to get in touch with that appropriate response to the experience you're having. And before you can do that, you have to figure out what is the experience you're having. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethoughts of grief. Come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world, and I'm free. I really think that's what liberation is. When we talk about liberation, it's that liberation is really the ability to sink into and experience the beauty that is just this moment. With all of its complexity, with all of its, the harsh reality of the glaring sun, but also the beauty that is, you know, the smell of jasmine. Thank you very much for your attention. I want to invite you to ask questions or comment or you don't, and it doesn't have to be on anything I said. I think one of the joys of being in community with each other is, you know, if you need to say something, say it. And being first is always the most difficult one. So Stephen, since I know I can annoy you, let's go ahead and ask you to say something.
Thank you for your talk, Dagon. I think what I really heard a lot that I think is so important in these times we live in right now is really finding a way to peace and ease, which, as you point out, is finding, you know, one of the huge gifts here is finding our way back to our original self, to our authentic nature. And when I've had those moments in my life that come once in a while and sometimes in a row, and I get to my authentic self, I realize that I don't have to be competitive. I don't have to be worried that I'm being ignored or invisibilized or the rest of that stuff. I can instead, practice the Brahma Viharas of loving kindness for me and for everybody else. Compassion, really starting with me, as you pointed out, very important not to forget where that needs to begin. And then mudita, which we talked about here for a minute last week, but just that capacity to extend unquestionable joy to the good things that are happening in other people's lives. And I think after the last 18 months, most of us have forgotten good things that happened in our lives, or tendency for them to be overwhelmed by all the other stuff, you know, of politics and quarantines. And so I think those practices, you know, if we get to our back to our the gift, our original self, the authentic self, what a well of peace and ease that can be, if we let it, and if we look to each other, as you and I have looked to each other for 25 years, and say, I need some peace and ease, and I'm not feeling that, so help me. So I think I agree with your final statement as well, that's the beauty of Sangha, is to say every day is not good. And some days you just need to stick your hand out and say, somebody please grab this or I'm tipping over. So thank you for keeping me upright today.
Thank you, my friend. I love you very much. Deborah, you unmuted. Is that because you want to say something?
I was going to say something. What the heck was it? Oh, when you said Buddhism doesn't give us anything we already have, I sort of blinked twice at that. For me, I feel like it's just sort of a way to interpret or something. I don't know. I wanted you to say more about that. I didn't understand, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, because I think it's actually a little bit of a tough pill to swallow, right? Because when we think about what it is that brought us here, right? Something led us to want to practice, right? Oh, I'm going to go check this out. I don't know. And very few of us